75 and 9, the awesome Wendy's in their prime, the bowl is quick, the batsman fine. Remember? Do you remember? Nope, I can't remember, that was too long ago. Yeah. Holding Marshall, Garner, Lloyd, and Mighty Bib. Mighty Bib. They were going for the hat trick, the greatest team that lived, that lived. They swagger, then they stagger out, they shake their heads, they cry. How on earth did we lose to a team that played Yash Pala Try?
Will a movie be made on England's Shambles to Champion script from 2015 to 19? Will all of them be on the Queen's Honours list? Imagine Sir Roy Morgan, can you? No, not us either. And most importantly, the question on everyone's mind, is it coming home on free-to-air television? Who would have thought? Or while we go on and on and on about this England team, will Kane Williamson's New Zealand nick the trophy and fly under the radar through a World Cup final too? Either way, the World Cup will have a first-time champion. How cool is that? This is ESPN Cricket 4 talking World Cup. I am Srinath Sripath, and with me are two men who had as good a tournament as your Williamsons, your Jason Roys, and your Jasprit Bumrahs. Osman Samiuddin. Hey, Osman. You just reached London back from a day of fun in Birmingham.
A day of fun is maybe not the four words I would choose. It wasn't a great match. It was an okay match. You know, the England was so good. It was a disappointing contest, I think. England played just an amazing game, man. Like, just watching them, more than even the batting, like, the first 10 overs with the ball, that was actually, like, the inverse of what their openers... What's the going name for Bairstow and Roy together these days?
There was? I don't know.
Broisto? I don't know. What Broisto? Can we do that? Broisto?
Royston.
No, yeah. It doesn't quite work. No, so watching, you know, what they do usually in the first, like, 6-7 overs, they completely disorient the opposition. England, like, did... to a large degree yesterday with Wokes and Archer against Australia. And, you know, and they had a good opening spell against India as well, but I don't think the damage that they inflicted was similar or equal to what they did yesterday. They were awesome. Like, that for those first 10 overs were probably, I would say, and, you know, Fidel's been around as well this tournament, but it was probably the best or among the top three best 10, you know, opening 10 over bursts through this tournament so far.
Little... surprising, because still, I think 2-3 days ago, we did an episode with George and all about how Kimber was saying that the best bowling side will win. And voila, suddenly England and New Zealand are the two best bowling sides statistically, which is completely contrary to what you were expecting, because this whole batting hype for England and everything, it's just now they're a really good bowling side all of a sudden.
Yeah, I think Archer makes a huge difference, right? Like, Archer has just, like, I can't believe that, I don't even know if that debate was real, like, before the World Cup, that, oh, will he or will he not play? Like, how will he not play? Like, look at him. how can he not play? Yeah, like, you know, no disrespect to David Willey or Plunkett, who, you know, is still in the squad. But, like, you know, if they had played in the World Cup and Archer had not, that would have had to go down as, like, one of the worst calls, you know, selection calls in the history of sport.
I think Archer bowls left-arm medium in the net.
So yesterday, yesterday before the game, by the way, he was bowling. That's a great point. Yesterday before the game starts, you know, when players are on the field just before the toss and stuff, and they're going through their emotions. So everyone else was, like, you know, running in and bowling normally. Stokes and Wokes and Wood and Plunkett. And Jofra was wearing his sunglasses and a big fat chain. And he was just bowling. He was bowling, like, literally bowling left-arm seam. Not even left-arm spin. He was bowling left-arm seam off, like, maybe, you know, Wasim Akram type paces. And he was swinging it. He was swinging it big. He wasn't fast, obviously, but he was swinging it big. Like, this guy is just, he's a genius.
I feel really bad for David Willey.
Exactly. I felt really, really bad. I was like, okay, now, you know, that's the end of that debate. And it's, you know, he's brought something to them, but also Finch made a really good point, which again is this under-noticed point, I guess, is that, you know, they do have bowlers like that now, like Archer, but also like Wokes and even somebody like Plunkett, actually, who they, if there's anything in a surface at all, whether it's grip, so you bowl your cutters, or whether there's a little bit of seam movement early on, these are the guys more than any others in the world, really, who are going to get something out of it. Especially on pitches in England, you know, Wokes will always find a little bit of something for those first 2-3 overs. Archer is Archer, and even, you know, Plunkett with his cutters and stuff. They do actually, it is actually a good attack. And then there's, you know, Adil Rashid obviously is there, and it is actually genuinely, I think, a good attack.
Stokes being the sixth seamer, I think Miller the prophet again comes into the picture. He spoke about
it. Exactly. He's got, like, I think he's got, what, 7-8 wickets for the tournament, Stokes?
Yeah.
And nobody's noticed that he's even bowled, really.
Yeah, that's true. By the way, we're about 5-6 minutes into the pod, and I think this is the longest I've taken to introduce.
I'm sorry, Andrew.
No.
I'm just thinking. You've completely forgotten about me, because you You're so excited to talk about an England ODI team.
Yeah.
For 5 whole minutes. Like, what?
How we have fallen.
How we must be living in that England ODI is getting
exciting.
You're so excited that you've completely forgotten that there's a third person on the pod.
I have to go have a shower after this, I think.
Fidel, it's the next big Netflix sports documentary, so wait for it.
Well, which one? I'm sure it's already being England, like the high England hype machine being
from Wellington to world champs or something.
Yeah. I'm sure it's already been like auctioned and bought up and I'm sure we'll hear a lot about it if they go on to win. Just talking about you two, talking about the best bowling attack. So New Zealand, that was a great first 10 overs as well, their semi-final against India. They had India 4 for 24, I think, in the 10th over. So, I mean, that's as good as it got right through the tournament. But I'm not so sure that their attack is as complete. I think they're missing Santner, while a very good spinner, is not quite there. It's just that they had these amazing conditions that day, like that perfectly suited them. They had a little window in which to swing the ball and to get India, you know, 3-4 down earlier. That's exactly what they did. Yeah, I mean, they're really good because Bolt is probably the best swinger of a ball, and Ferguson's been massively impressive as well. But I'm not sure they're quite up to. If you just look on paper, just quality wise, I think England are better. But the caveat you always have to use for New Zealand is that they're not a team that can be judged on paper or on form or whatever. They can surprise you. They can outsmart you, which is what they did to India, essentially. So I think it's going to be a fascinating final. I'm really looking forward to it.
You know, I was looking up some stats, and so power play wickets. So who is it? It's Henry and Bolt together have exactly the same number of wickets as Archer and Mokes during this tournament in power play. I think they've got, as a pair, they've got 13 wickets in those first 10 overs across the course of this tournament. And they're, you know, they're the four kind of top power play bowlers in this tournament, which is pretty, and New Zealand have been probably over the last 4 years among the best power play bowlers in the world on numbers. But yeah, I agree with Andrew that, you know, they're going to need, I mean, it would be really good if they got some kind of conditions in the morning, because if there's anything and they're bowling first and, you know, there's a little bit of swing, then, you know, somebody like Bolt is going to get something out of it. And I just keep kind of thinking that's going to be the key, is if New Zealand can just start well with the ball, whichever way they go, you know, whether it's first or second, it would make a huge difference, I think, to the game.
Yeah, Fidel, before we go on to more serious things, the one thing that everyone is cracking jokes about was Kumar Dharmasena getting a wicket in a World Cup semi-final after 20 years yesterday when Jason Roy didn't quite edge it. There was daylight. And the worst part than that is today, this morning, I was reading in the Australian papers about how the ECB should punish Roy and ban him for the final, like the Aussie board did with Warner and Smith after Newlands last year. This peak overreaction to a hilarious moment.
That's absolutely beautiful. So like, essentially they're saying, if we sawed our own limbs off after a very minor thing, then you should as well. You should follow suit in absolutely just ruining yourself. No, I mean, obviously Roy's reaction was a little bit over the top. I can understand where he's coming. He was batting really well. He was inside of 100 in a World Cup semi-final. Like, it's a very special thing for a player to achieve. Dharmasena, yeah, it was a horrible, umpire of the year, by the way. I just feel like I need to, as a Sri Lankan, I need to at least just be in his corner a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it was an atrocious decision. There's no getting away from it. And it was so weird because I think he kind of thought about giving a wide for that ball and then decided, no, actually he's mixed it.
In between the review as well.
Yeah. Look, I can't defend that. There's
all kinds of wrong.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I mean, he's still the umpire of the year, so you know, he's still got that going for him.
I think the funniest was Roy's reaction. Obviously, he got fined for the obscenity as well that he, I think, muttered when he was walking off. But I think one of the first things I think he said, And you can listen to it. You know, if we were listening to it on the replays and so I think one of the first things, first when he turned around to, was it Erasmus who was standing at square leg? I think it was Erasmus. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Was standing at square leg. And he said to him, because he's completely dazed, like he'd been punched. He was like, he's not giving that out. Or something like that. And one of the Australian players running past him saying, mate, you have no reviews left. It was just such a comedy of errors. But I can report faithfully that Kumar Dharmasena was alive and well and fairly light of conscience. I saw him this morning having breakfast at the hotel and he looked pretty chilled out.
Excellent.
So good on him.
Only until the death match on Sunday when Erasmus and Dharmasena take on Roy at Lodge.
Celebrity death match.
A sellout crowd. Yeah. So the other side of the story is obviously Australia losing a World Cup semi-final. They were 6-0 up, like a tennis bagel scoreline which they had just before coming into this game. It's just crazy that Australia beat it in a World Cup semi-final, that too, like, thumped completely. Fidel, obviously, you'll have memories from the 96 World Cup, which is the final, the rare knockout game they lost. But Osman, like, pretty unreal, surreal, almost watching Australia fall in a World Cup knockout game in England. At Edgbaston, that too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think Jared noted it in his piece, and he did a good job, actually, of basically, you know, I think this whole thing about Australia not having lost semi-finals is because they've always had, like, really good teams whenever they've been in a semi-final. And I think this time, I think people recognized, I think, you know, people written about it on the site as well, that they were not by any means a complete team. You know, there were many, many gaps. There was the fifth bowler issue. The batting was kind of reliant on Alex Carey saving them when Warner and Finch, you know, didn't do anything. And he did that again yesterday. It just felt like they were relying on like maybe 4 or 5 players. And then the rest were kind of, they were hoping that they would come through. You know, Maxi didn't have a bad tournament, but he didn't have a great tournament either. That hurt them. So it was surreal watching them being beaten so badly. I think they were completely outplayed yesterday. I think there was one phase where Smith and Carey were batting where, you know, they put on a century partnership where, and even then they didn't look dominant, but they looked like they were doing that Australian thing of just getting back into a game and, you know, suddenly they turned it around. But then, you know, Stark came out to bowl and the way Bairstow and Roy just went after them. I mean, like, Roy played some crazy shots yesterday. There was that 1-6 which he flicked over square leg, which, I mean, you know, that's short of the tournament. And we're talking about a tournament where Rohit has done many crazy things. And you know, Sri Lanka have had Fernando playing some amazing shots as well. And that shot was an insane shot that he flicked over square leg. And it was a bad ball and stuff. But so, like, to see Australia being beaten like that, it's rare that Australia get beaten that badly. In any game, whether it's a bilateral or a knockout, it's rare that they get beaten that badly. So to see that happen was like, oh man, England, like, are on one here.
Yeah, that too. Like, I think that at one point they needed 58 of 26 overs, and the people tweeting that it's like 58 of 26, but it's overs this time. It's pretty pretty
yeah,
crazy
exactly.
for England.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
not a Klusener equation. Yeah. Yeah. So I particularly wanted to talk about two bowlers. One is obviously Chris Wokes. The other is Mitchell Santner. We'll get to Santner first with Fidel. Fidel, like, it was that 15-minute window. I think you wrote about it. This talk about how Bolt and Henry made the most of that 15 minutes. Rohit got an unplayable ball. Kohli fell to a in-dipper from Bolt, which he didn't expect. But Santner threw those middle overs. Obviously, this Dhoni thing is there, that he's there through the middle overs. He will find the singles, etc. But even this Dhoni, even considering his form in a World Cup semi-final, a lesser spinner would have given more runs to Santner. Santner almost felt like he bowled 10 overs without conceding a single run through that whole innings. It's better than even Jadeja, who had a great game.
Yeah, it was weird. I think like at eight overs in, he had given away 15 runs and taken 2 wickets or something. It was something crazy like that. Like, 2 of his first 3 overs were maidens. He just came in and he just did, like, he it was basically like Daniel Vittori, but in another body, essentially just like varying his flight. Did not turn a single ball, I don't think. Like, I don't remember him actually. Jadeja at least turned 2 or 3, but basically just, yeah, basically was just really accurate, and just guileful. And, he did the job. And I mean, done a huge favor by the fact that India were so far behind in the game at that time. But he's come out and he did that. And the thing with New Zealand is that they just find contributions from anywhere. You know, you would never expect Mitchell Santner to be to put in such a star turn in a World Cup semi-final. Like, that is completely unexpected. You know, the crazy catch that James Nation took. I mean, I actually couldn't breathe for about 30 seconds after that happened, because it was just so insane. The way he dived, the way he picked it up, and, you know, even he couldn't believe it. It was just, yeah, I mean, New Zealand have been doing this not all the way through their campaign. Obviously, they had their three big losses towards the end of the league stage, but they've got themselves through some really tough scrapes against South Africa, against West Indies, against Bangladesh to an extent. And then they did what they did against India. So they're kind of like a battle-hardened team, also a very, very flawed team. I think, going back to Osman's point earlier that he made, was that Australia are flawed. But I feel like all the teams in this World Cup have had substantial flaws. Like, they're not, no one you can look at and say they're a complete one-day unit. England kind of going towards proving us wrong a little bit there, because the last couple of games they've won in conditions that weren't necessarily 100% batsman friendly. So,
but they kind of failed early. Like, unlike the others, they had their failures in the league phase.
Yeah, they got their what you say about South Africa, they got their chokes out of the way, or they got their bad games out of the way. So it'll be interesting to see. I think I actually have no idea who the favorite is going into this final, despite the fact that New Zealand are obviously a more flawed team, clearly didn't do anywhere near as well in the league phase, have Martin Guptill and the openers, Nichols hasn't done much better either, but Martin Guptill's in awful form. Basically, they need Taylor and Williamson for all of their runs, a little bit of help from Neesham. Like, there's so many issues with that team, and yet they're in a World Cup final, and yet you're not, like, you just cannot rule them out because they do crazy things.
One of the cliches that you really want to come through is a New Zealand fielding effort taking them into the final. The Neesham catch that you mentioned, yes, the overall ground fielding, because it at one point felt like Rishabh Pant was hitting all these, you know, power-packed drives and somebody in the ring was catching it. It was Williamson or Ross Taylor or Neesham, whoever. There's so many of those fours that were saved. Thankfully, somebody's logging the fielding stats finally. And of course, finally, the Martin Guptill run out. A lot of Dhoni fans will argue that at 25 of 10, India had a good shout with him at the crease, and suddenly Guptill pulls off what I would think is a World Cup Hall of Fame moment, which is absolutely crazy and came out of the blue. Colin de Grandhomme, by the way, listeners, if you're thinking the six fielders in the ring or not, Colin de Grandhomme came in from short third man. He didn't sprint like Usain Bolt from deep third man, which is why he was at the stumps. Fidel, crazy moment, right? The whole crowd, it felt like, went to pin drop silence instantly after that direct hit at Manchester.
Yeah, I mean, no, it was an amazing bit of fielding, and to come up with it at such a pressure moment is a huge, and to do so after basically skidding through the tournament the way that Guptill has on his, I almost did the Sourav Ganguly pronunciation of his name there. That's the thing about this New Zealand team. I mean, Tim Southee was on the field for the majority of that match because Henry Nichols had a little bit of a niggle, and Southee was just the overjoyed nature. I mean, he basically hasn't played all tournament because Henry's been outperforming him, or Henry's sort of fitted into the team a little bit better. And there's something special and very likable about that team culture that has those kinds of characters in it. You know, everyone's bought in 100% to what the team's trying to achieve, and there's a lack of ego. I mean, the cool thing is that then it's not like an enforced thing either. You know, you see James Neesham losing his crap at teammates. It's not like everyone is monochrome and just a bunch of really, you know, singularly good guys. There's a little bit of personality now as well with Williamson. Williamson has been great in the press conferences, by the way, cracking jokes like pretty much every time I've seen him, just incredibly relaxed.
Dhoni will make it to the New Zealand team and whatever else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's about. Yeah, he was asked about whether if he was India captain, would he pick Dhoni, and he responded by saying, "Is he eligible for New Zealand selection? Because we definitely consider that." So those kinds of moments are great.
Had you been the India captain today, would you have taken Dhoni in your playing 11? now?
He's not eligible to play for New Zealand. But he's a world-class player. So had I been the Indian captain? Is he looking to change nationalities? Or because we will consider that selection if we have to.
Yeah, I mean, the annoying thing about the Dhoni run-out was just see, perhaps it's his last game. And as a huge fan of Dhoni, it was a bit sad that was the ending. I didn't really back him to get those final runs, to be honest. I thought New Zealand had it well and truly sewn up by then.
By the Jadeja wicket, right? That's when I thought it was properly over, when he bowled to.
Yeah, but I think that was definitely the end of Jadeja's wicket was the end of India's resistance. But Dhoni did get a standing ovation on his way out. He didn't really acknowledge it, but you know, it's been, if that is the end, it's been a pretty phenomenal career and one that I think we've all enjoyed watching.
Yeah, we'll come to Dhoni. Usman, nicely segueing, because I just got a notification from Reddit which says England's ODI transformation is really one of the great stories of sports management and leadership. Just, they've not even won the World Cup.
And yet that makes it sound so utterly dull and boring. Just like, I never want to talk about England again.
Yeah, you've got a game to cover in a couple of days. But just coming back, because George and Kimber were both making this point about how, except for one, two guys in that squad, it's a genuinely likable bunch of England guys who are not being talked about in the same vein as New Zealand just because they're England and everyone wants to beat them, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's it. You know, the really weird thing happened this morning. We were getting to a train back from Birmingham, and I was with Sambit Pal, who is the boss of us all and, you know, holds our fate in his hands every day. But, so we were waiting on the platform at Birmingham station, and we're waiting for the train, and who walks in just in front? And it's a fairly packed platform, by the way. So who walks in front of us? None other than about to be possibly world champion captain Owen Morgan, with his partner, and he's just standing in front of us, and nobody is, you know, I wouldn't expect people to like throng him in England, because you know they don't do that in England, I don't think. Although I don't know, maybe with a footballer they would have done, which is kind of the point. But you know, nobody came up to him. There was even like some Indian fans who walked by, and I thought surely one selfie moment is about to happen here. Indian fan, smartphone, selfie. It didn't happen. I don't think they even recognized him. And they all kind of walked. And it was actually a really nice moment that, you know, this guy, 2 days from now, his life has already changed. I'm sure this campaign has probably changed a lot of people's lives in the England cricket setup. But, you know, 2 days from now, truly things should be a seismic change coming up to this guy. And he was just standing here completely unmobbed to the point that me and Sambit were like, well, you know, should we go up and say hi to him just to kind of so that like,
should we ask for a sympathy selfie?
Yeah, exactly. Like, just so you know, he feels like he's been acknowledged and seen and recognized. But you know, he was completely fine. Like, he was just chilling, you know, he was there with his partner and seemed to be having a laugh and stuff. And then he went off at the back of the train somewhere. I'm not even sure it was a first-class carriage, by the way. Like, he could have just been traveling like normal people. And that was that. And this was, I was thinking, like, this is the guy who could do something no English captain has done before him. Mm-hmm. You know, 25 years or however many years since they've been in a final. They've never won a World Cup. They've been playing, you know, a fairly pyrotechnic kind of game for the last 4 years, game-changing kind of game. You know, people are trying to, like, emulate the way they play. And yet here he is just chilling on Birmingham New Street Platform 2, waiting for a train to Houston, getting in there, like, 15 minutes early and just waiting like the rest of us. And nobody, like, even going up to him. It was a bizarre moment.
Maybe free-to-air coverage will change that on Sunday with him lifting a trophy.
I kind of think that it's great, obviously, that they're showing it free-to-air, but, you know, they've got the Wimbledon final that day. They've got the British Grand Prix as well. You know, Lewis Hamilton's not very happy about... Imagine, like, Formula One being threatened by cricket. It's just like, you know, there's a shark and then there's a mouse. And the shark is saying, look, mouse,
like India.
Get out of my space. Yeah, it's like, get out of my space or something, you know. But I just feel they're putting so much pressure onto this one game and the free-to-air effect it's crazy, like, to think that in a country like England, they really believe that one game that comes on free-to-air television can change, like, an entire thinking about a sport. That, I don't know, that feels like there's a lot of pressure there on that one game. You know, it might turn out to be a really dud game. It might turn out to be a really boring game. There's many games of ODIs which are boring. Yeah. I'm not trying to put a hex on it, but it seems like they're pinning a lot. They're just waiting for it to either, like, you know, just maybe even fail, because I don't know. That's a lot of to turn around an entire culture around one sport based on
one
free-to-air game.
Shared by Wimbledon final.
And not even on one free-to-air channel. I think it starts off, I saw DeBell tweeting about it earlier today. It goes from one channel, and then the British Grand Prix starts, and then the British Grand Prix
moves to the other one.
It moves to another channel, and then if the...
But that's also free-to-air, right? I think that's also free-to-air.
It is. Both of them are free-to-air.
But it's just like, you know, it's such a crazy thing. And I've lost faith that actually a World Cup win, like, what is it? Is it really going to turn the sport around in England? I'm not totally sure. I mean, it's just been so invisible, outside of, like, you know, a few kilometers from each ground, there are signboards.
Yeah.
But it's just been so invisible that if they win it, I feel like it'll just be a blip on the, it might take over the coverage for a little while. There is a chance that it'll inspire, like, a young group of players, but, I'm not 100% optimistic that it will.
The train station story reminds me, just before I think the World Cup started, there's some print journalists asking Owen Morgan, Osman, you might have been there, but what's changed for him since becoming England captain? He said, more people recognize me on the tube and wave at me once in a while. This is a memorable quote that I remember because it kind of makes sense, given what you say.
Not coming into action yet today. not actually happening today. But I mean, you know, it was kind of nice also, you know, being as we're used to kind of, I don't know, Andrew, would people be mobbed in they would, right? In Sri Lanka and Colombo?
In New Zealand? Like New Zealand.
Not in New Zealand. In Sri Lanka, if Murali and all were walking around, they would be mobbed, right? They would be walking around with an entourage.
Yeah. I mean, Murali would definitely be approached. I mean, the only real, but, it's Sri Lanka
is
weird.
Because, mobbed in Mumbai, Fidel.
Yeah. But Kumar is the only one I've seen being, like, properly mobbed in Sri Lanka. He's the only cricket I've seen. The others, there, people will go up and ask for selfies and will ask for autographs or whatever. But it's not like a throng of people. Kumar was the one who did get absolutely surrounded at times.
So, I mean, it happens in the subcontinent, right? You're kind of used to
People would definitely recognize, if they were just at a train station, like, I don't think many Sri Lankan cricketers can take the train because they would constantly be having to take selfies with people, especially the more popular ones, the established ones, especially if you're of, like, the Morgan range of players. There's no way. So, yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a fun story.
You know what? I'm guessing, by the way, that even football, remember that great story, that great Twitter story about, Srinath, you'll definitely remember this.
Lingard and Pogba playing Uno cards.
Yes. And they were on a train, right?
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, like, even English footballers, English Premier League footballers travel on trains and stuff. And I'm guessing that it's okay for them to travel without getting mobbed all the time. So, you know, maybe it's an England thing. And maybe it's just I'm drawing from one basic example.
I think that was in a first class coach, if I remember right. But you're right. I mean, it's broadly a theme in England where, you know, top class international sportsmen travel on trains.
And they don't get mobbed.
So the next question I wanted to ask Fidel is, you've lived in New Zealand. I believe in New Zealand as well, it's going to be on free to air. I've spoken about this in, I think, 4 or 5 episodes. We've done about 12, 13. And if somebody's been listening to this podcast, they'll be sick and tired of this whole thing. And many people have asked, a few people have actually asked, what's the closest for people living in India or in Asia to relate to this whole free-to-air thing? Because a lot of us have subscriptions to Dish TV or satellite TV, which is what Sky is essentially. What's the closest thing and why do so many people miss out on the action? You might have a perspective from living in New Zealand.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different in New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand cricket has been on Sky, on paid TV for a long, long time. But cricket is in schools, so in a way that it isn't. Like, I went to a public school in a state school in New Zealand, and pretty much every state school will offer cricket, which apparently is not the case here in the UK. So that does play a part. When cricket season's going on, everyone's talking about cricket. like, you know, it very much goes from the rugby takes up about 9 months of the year now. But in the 3 months that cricket does have, cricket does genuinely come to the fore. Like, it does genuinely, you look at newspapers, some days, even in England matches, cricket didn't make to the back page of a lot of newspapers in England. Whereas that would be unthinkable in New Zealand. New Zealand, it's just much more embedded, it's just much more part of the culture that when in the 3 months where rugby doesn't happen, they switch to cricket. It's not just a free-to-air and paid TV thing. I think in England, it's just way more crowded. There's just more happening. New Zealand doesn't have a thing like a Wimbledon, for example, that happens even for just 2 weeks of the year that takes precedence over everything else. So all of that, I think England cricket, the big mistake has been not to take stock of all of that, that people have so many different directions in which they can be pulled. And that to take it off free-to-air cricket is much more of kind of a failure than even in a place like New Zealand, which NZC have gone down that path. But their ground reality is very different. People keep coming back to cricket. Stands keep getting packed out. People are still very invested in it. I think there's no like cricket-playing nation in which you can't have like a more knowledgeable chat with just a random person about cricket. You can't do that in the UK to the extent you can do that pretty much everywhere else.
Just a couple of days ago, I was telling a colleague office that our office security guard knew the net run rate with which India qualified, especially after that game was washed out on day one. He was basically saying if it's washed out on the next day, India threw because they finished higher and they had so-and-so net run rate. It's basically like the whole opposite of what we've been talking about in England. While on India, just one last question. Some journalists at Kohli's press conference raised the question of having an IPL-style playoffs. It's a question we asked in our tournament preview, but it kind of feels like the wrong time to run a campaign for playoffs after you've like lost a semi-final at the World Cup, because knockouts have been there forever. This format has kind of been okay thanks to a couple of wins like Sri Lanka, Osman. It's a good question, but a wrong time to ask, isn't it?
Yeah, I also, you know, I feel also it's completely a wrong time to ask it. But I also feel like with that kind of IPL-style playoff, even with the IPL, I feel, although there's more teams, I feel like you need more teams for something like that to be like a proper thing. I feel like, you know, like they use it in the PSL as well, for example. And the PSL has six teams. So, you know, six teams, it's almost like you're almost guaranteed entry into that playoff anyway, if you're just not a really, really crap team, which Lahore Qalandars are, you know, every year. But, you know, you basically get through if you can manage somehow to just string together a couple of wins, you're basically through to the qualifiers in the playoffs. I feel like something like that in a 10-team tournament, I don't know, I'm kind of okay. If you're going to make it a longer tournament where there are more results coming into play, a bigger tournament where there are more results coming into play, then I would kind of be okay with the idea of a playoff.
But one team might play like 350 over games in 5 days, which doesn't even happen in a bilateral half the time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to find like some kind of flaw in pretty much every format. I have never like heard before this. I mean, you know, you guys have discussed it, but I'd never heard before this tournament, for example, that there should be a IPL style playoff system in place of the World Cup. And God knows the World Cup has been through enough format changes.
Yeah, and 45 days already.
Exactly, in its 12 editions, that there should be another. And I think, like, you know, I feel like it's a kind of game where you try and essentially the battle is to keep things as simple as possible, because there's so much else that goes over the head of the, you know, the casual fan, the casual watcher. And if you bring in, it's not a complicated system, but, you know, that's because we're also used to it now after years and years of the IPL. But if you bring that into the international game, then to try and kind of, I don't know, it's just, I feel like let's not complicate things too much more, even though it might not be especially complicated.
True. I personally felt Kohli was quite equanimous in his answer, but this whole I think more English media narrative about him complaining about the semi.
He said
that's the fun of the knockout, etc.
and he did say that and I kind of agree with that. I think knockouts are just more interesting. There's more on the line. There's so much tension in a knockout match. If you know that the team is going to have a second bite at it and they're about to lose, I feel like it takes something away from the tournament. It takes something away from like the moment. You get some really magical moments in semifinals, especially when one team is just fighting tooth and nail to get into that final, and you know that it's winner take all, and there's something special about that, and I think like we've lost a little bit by not having quarterfinals anymore. Because that's just like an extra knockout game that you don't have.
Fair point.
Also the cricket, you know, the cricket world is already unfair. It's already loaded in favor of certain teams. I'm not even going to get into big three stuff. Let's just
no, we like you just did last week.
Yeah, I know. I'll not dig up that particular round. But the last three World Cups World Cup finals have been contested by the host team. In 2015, it was two host nations that met at the final. So there's already like, it's already stacked in favor of some teams. Giving a team like a New Zealand, obviously like massive underdogs going into that India match, a chance to, you know, one-off chance to beat India. That I think is a positive thing. It's, it kind of evens the scales a bit. It just makes a lot more people interested, I think. Like it's not if you're always going to get the number one team in the world winning the World Cup, then why not just have rankings?
Yeah, and without knockout games, we'd not even have a South Africa narrative. I can't imagine cricket without that.
Imagine one gaping hole in the history of cricket.
Yeah, what would we talk about when the World Cup is over? I mean, whenever South Africa win a bilateral, there'd be no asterisk without knockout games.
So Bazid Khan and I actually, we talked about this, like under what circumstances can South Africa win a World Cup, and we decided that it had to be a bilateral series, right? It had to be like a number, but they couldn't even know that it was a World Cup that they were competing for. They would find out a choke in the bilateral series, so they would be told afterwards after they won it, oh, you won
a World Cup.
And that is the only way we can envision it happening now.
South Africa roll up for a bilateral series against Zimbabwe. Five matches
find out it's a
in
World
South
Cup.
Africa. Yeah, and they're being told at the end, guys, you've just won the World Cup. Well done. Thanks. Woo-hoo.
And finally, just rolling on to the final, there's one question that I kept thinking about. When was the last time we saw a great World Cup final? India-Sri Lanka 2011 was a close contest of sorts, but nothing like a great game. I don't
remember that one. I've just locked it out of my memory, so I can't say.
not coming to you, obviously.
I can't speak a word about that.
Not coming to you, yeah. But I can't remember.
Yeah, great World Cup final. I mean, what, like 2003, 2007, they were all like one-sided.
92? No, not even 92.
I mean, it 92 had some great moments. And there was a bit of tension, I guess, for Pakistan in that, you know, Lamb and Fairbrother were building something. But, you know, I still remember thinking at the time, definitely that Pakistan was still on top. And that one of the bowlers, because they had such a bowling attack, would get a wicket. And that would essentially be it. So, I guess a great final.
87?
Yeah. 87 would be one, but that was blanketed by the whole disappointment of it not being an India-Pakistan final at Eden Gardens, you know. Yeah. But I think, actually, genuinely, although, you know, of course, it changed the game and everything, but I think the 83 final would have been a great final because it was a complete against-the-odds upset. You know, and any time you have, like, an upset, an underdog like that winning the final of a tournament, then it's a great thing, I think. And it wasn't a hugely close game, I think, but if you can imagine at that time, a team like India beating a team like the West Indies, even though, you know, one day cricket was in such a different stage back then. It was, you know, basically test cricket, but in one day.
Yeah.
For that to happen, I think that probably quantifies as a great final.
And it had moments that we kind of still talk about, right? Like the Viv catch that Kapil Dev took is something that's just, and I don't think any other final from that era has that kind of cachet like that.
The Srikant cover drives.
Maybe the reverse sweep.
Blistering 38.
Catting.
Blistering 38 off like what, 50 balls, I think? 38, blistering 38 off 50 that Krishna Pachari Srikant scored. Yeah, the 87 final, I think, actually is underplayed sometimes. I think, you know, 7-run margin, and that was a great tournament. There was like a lot of 1-run margin wins and losses in that tournament as well. There were a couple, I think, at least. And, you know, to lose it with that reverse sweep and stuff, that, yeah. But I think, again, like I say, the whole blanket around that game was that it wasn't an India-Pakistan game. So it could have been like a tied game or whatever, and people still would have been like, yeah, it's not India-Pakistan. What's going on? What have these guys done or whatever? So
nobody cares, basically.
Exactly.
My sort of wish list for the final is a low score scoring game and New Zealand's bowlers back in business at Lords, which is kind of a dream scenario because when Williamson bats, like everyone's criticizing him and Taylor like they did in the semi-final. Why, what is this go slow batting? They're playing like the 90s and whatever.
And then they realize
that the rest of the opposition are batting. Fidel, what are you hoping for from the final apart from a New Zealand win before the Rugby World Cup?
Yeah, on the Rugby World Cup, I'm not a huge All Blacks fan. I'm a much bigger fan. So I would love for cricket to have its big moment in New Zealand. That would be, I think, a great thing. But apart from that, I'd love to see some serious swing. Because I think there's no better bowler to watch when, you know, with a ball that's moving the air than Bolt. He's yeah. got like that terrific action and it's just so smooth and he's so skillful and masterful at it that it's just a joy to watch. So I would love to see some movement in the air. Maybe, the cliche about Lords always is that you look up, not down. So hopefully it's overcast conditions and they get what they want. I think, some Ross Taylor runs would be great as well. Huge fan of, his batting and sort of what he's been through his career. It's one of the most interesting careers that doesn't really get talked about much, you know, with the captaincy being taken away. And
his eye surgery itself is a great sort of narrative.
His eye surgery, at one point he was hit in the box and the doctor said, like, you shouldn't bat for the next 6 months because, like, if you get hit there again, you're not having any more kids. So, like, there's all these, like, storylines going on in a Taylor career. And it'd be great to see them win a World Cup. And I think there's very few deserving. I will say that earlier on, you know, there was talk about that England being as nice or as likable as a New Zealand team. I don't think that's true. I think New Zealand are on another level when it comes to that kind of stuff.
You mean Isham's Twitter kind of takes it on its own, just like doesn't need anything else.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Nation's Twitter and just the general.
He's got Jofra Archer's old Twitter to fight against now, though.
Yeah, true. Archer's Twitter probably has taken over now as the most famous.
Classic Twitter stuff. Cricket account. There's literally nothing, no situation in life, no human being on this universe, no cricket stuff, certainly, that he hasn't tweeted about at some stage.
Yeah, he's like a cricketing Confucius, or like. There should be a book about that.
World Cup final doesn't return the result, but he said that he wants to go to Lords, so that counts as a tweet. For the final.
Yes, exactly.
And finally, Fidel, are you going to be, I hope you're not going to be traveling on final day. You're going to be watching it in London, or what's your plan?
No, I'll be in Colombo. I'll be landing just before it starts and I'll be definitely tuning in and watching every ball.
Ah, excellent. Osman, what about you? What are you expecting? And you're going to be covering New Zealand in the final? That's, I hope it's your lucky day.
I'll mostly be watching the Wimbledon final and the Grand Prix.
Ooh.
No, I'm kidding. No. I will be there, of course. And, you know, we'll have, George will be there. George DeBell will be there. Jared's going to be around as well. I think I will be covering whoever is more coverable. But, you know, I won't lie and say, I mean, England is a big result, obviously, for the game in this country or whatever. But, like, New Zealand winning it is not the sexy global story, but like New Zealand winning it would be amazing. And not, you know, not just because all the kind of slightly patronizing stuff people say about them, oh, what a small nation, just 5 million, how have they produced this and how, you know, they're punching above their weight and they're doing this and that. There are some genuinely skilled and gifted players in that team. They're not complete by any means. You know, they've got flaws. Their batting is like, you know, two guys away from being a club side sometimes. But their bowling attack has enough guys in it. Like Lockie Ferguson, we haven't even mentioned him. And, you know, he didn't play against England in the group game. You know, and if Lords turns out a flat pitch, then, you know, him through those middle overs with some pace, it's a thing that you look forward to. So, you know, just for them to win it, I think because they do so many good things on the cricket field with their skills and stuff, they do so much so well when they're playing well, that it would just be good for them to just have a World Cup, man, to be able to say New Zealand world champions. That's an amazing thing. I don't follow any rugby at all, so I've never been in a position to say that ever about anything.
No idea. I found out 2 days ago that Ian Smith is an acclaimed rugby commentator, and I googled to check if it was the same guy, and it was. He's apparently.
I didn't even have that idea.
I'm a big fan of Ian Smith. I think he's one of my top three commentators, but acclaimed is putting it too strongly for his rugby commentary.
Fair enough. He was great. Greatest. He's been great this World Cup. Huh? He's been absolutely, like, his calling for the final moments of that India game. Absolutely top notch, man. Absolutely top notch.
Yeah. The commentary lineup is going to be as great as the final lineup itself. And lastly, on New Zealand, I've never seen so many Indians, having watched so many World Cups, that are backing team that the team that eliminated them to win in the final, which is so, so rare. They're always like, let Sri Lanka lose this World Cup, whatever, and so on. There's so many times that it's happened now. They hate Australia for life for the 2003 final, and whatever else. There's so many finals that India have not won, and people start backing the opponents in the final, and this time they're all backing New Zealand. That's one. And apart from Lockie, the other guy we've not spoken about is Ravindra Jadeja, which was kind of a great sort of story in the whole week, starting with the whole tweet and whatnot.
Tokna
happened with just open arms and the sword dance and whatnot. Pretty crazy story as well. Fidel, should we just talk about Jadeja before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't think there's that semi-final performance is as good an all-round performance as probably there's ever been played in the knockouts, apart from, of course, Arvinda De Silva 1996 final.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, like, it's very hard. He bowled, I think 1 for 32 was his spell. And I think his run out of Taylor in the second to last over of New Zealand innings, if I remember correctly, was actually just from a pure fielding perspective, without taking into context that the moment in the match, was harder to pull off. He had one stump to aim at.
Yeah.
Taylor was booking it to the other end. That was stunning. I think he took two really good catches as well. And then he comes out and does that with the bat. If India were pretty much dead and buried, no one thought that they were going to come back. He came in and played an outstanding innings. I mean, he brought them back, like, basically got two defibrillators and punched the hell out of that match until it kind of gasped to life again. And yeah, I do think that his criticism of Mandrekar is a little bit unfair, in that just because Mandrekar hasn't played so many matches,
stats guru based tweet.
That doesn't rule him out as a critic. But you know, if that motivates you, I mean, like we've seen with Bairstow as well, that sometimes criticism can motivate you to great things in World Cups. And sometimes
no criticism can, as in Bairstow's case. Because there is actually no criticism of him in the first place. He imagined it all into being.
There was a parody news website headline today saying that India lost because Mandrekar didn't critique enough of their players.
Sounds about right.
Right. On that note, brings us to the end of another episode of Talking World Cup. It's likely to be our penultimate episode. We'll reconvene after the final and look back at the highs and lows of the tournament. For now, thanks, Osman. Thanks, as always.
Thanks, Srinath.
And thanks, Fidel. Safe travels back to Sri Lanka.
Thank you very much.
And thanks, as always, to you, listener, for your company on Talking World Cup. Remember, you can listen to us on iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, on your favorite podcasting platform. Remember to leave us a rating, do all the good things you do on iTunes, because it helps more and more people find the podcast. We've pretty much tripled our ratings on iTunes over the last month or so thanks for that. And until next time, from all of us at ESPN 54, it's adios. Thank you.